Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Front One.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
Hi, my name is Maya. I just wanted to tell you that it's Wednesday.
No, wait a second. We got to do that again. It's not Wednesday. It is Thursday.
No.
What? Well, it's Friday today, but we're actually recording this for Thursday. So say it's Thursday, July 7th, 2011.
It's Thursday, July 7th, 2011.
And welcome to the Majority Report.
And it's Myla Cedar, which coming...
No, and welcome to the Majority Report.
And welcome to the Majority Report. Not going to say that.
Yeah, now you can say whatever you
want. Okay. So, one day I was singing a song.
You got to talk into the microphone.
One day I was singing a song called... I was doing a play. This was my first play.
Okay, hold on for a second. This is turning into a confessional. It's a little bit too much. Let me just say what's going to be on the show today. I am on vacation still, but still all new fresh content from Netroots Nation. I sat down with John Aravosis and a two foreign bloggers. One from, I believe, Morocco and one from Zimbabwe. Do you know where Zimbabwe is, Myla? Take a guess. What continent do you think Zimbabwe is in?
Let's see.
The continent starts with an A.
Africa.
Yeah. Good job. You're a smart kid. Who taught you that?
No one.
Yeah, nobody. All right, folks. Stick around. You'll enjoy this.
I'm going to talk.
Okay, and Myla's going to talk for a very brief moment. Go ahead.
So, I was walking through the woods, picking up the puds, and farting in my pants.
That's great. Okay. Thank you. I'm sure people really wanted to hear that.
Thank you.
Folks, make sure you tune in tomorrow on Friday. You'll hear my interview with Marcos Melitzis and Senator Al Franken. Enjoy. We are at Netroots Nation 2011, and joining me are John Aravosis. He is the proprietor, the originator, the publisher, and the writer at America Blog and America Blog Gay.
And America Blog Elections.
And America Blog Elections. The America Blog Empire.
Yep.
Wonderful to speak to John Aravosis. And with us, we also have a blogger. His name is Zuhair.
Yep.
We're not going to say his last name because... Well, he can tell us why we can't say his last name. He is a blogger, but from Morocco, who has come to the Netroots Nation. How did you end up coming here?
I'm part of the FPC tour bloggers. It's a tour arranged by the State Department. It's a week long. Approximately a week long. We've been kind of attending seminars and conferences about under the theme blogging for political and social change.
And so
we've been invited to the Netroots Nation.
And so you blog primarily about politics?
I blog about politics, and because of my education, I blog also about economics, mostly on economic policies and social engineering.
In Morocco, I guess it's not as you're not as comfortable. Do you blog under a pseudonym?
Or? I use my first name, but, you know, because of the Google research or whatever search engine results, it would be a bit difficult or awkward to find myself again near my family name's near some very radical proposals on how to change things in the country, you know, within the democratic process, of course.
Interesting. And so, John, I mean, you have a background in this type of blogging and forum blogging, and yes, I mean, put it in perspective. What's the difference in terms of what you experience as a U.S. blogger and someone who blogs in a country that doesn't have the same freedoms that we have, at least up until this point?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been doing a lot of work sort of internationally with blogging and even actually with the State Department as well, ironically, going to Morocco to train journalists in how to blog a couple of years ago. It's, you know, what's interesting is it's a totally different story in these other countries, especially a place like Morocco where Morocco is freer than a lot of other countries in, I'll say the Middle East, but we're really talking North Africa here, but it's still an Arab country, if you want to call it that. I mean, Morocco is sort of a unique case. But they are freer, but they still have a king that runs the country. He really does run the country. It's not a democracy. You can speak out, but you better watch it. You know, and what's interesting, I think, is that the advocacy we do, and I was talking to Zuhair about this earlier, we do a lot of in-your-face stuff here with the blogs. You know, I took on Dick Cheney a couple years ago, you know, over his lesbian daughter, and then that certainly ticked off people here. And, you know, if you did that in Morocco or anywhere else, frankly, in a lot of the world, I think you'd at the very least get arrested and probably a lot worse.
Zuhair, how much when you are sitting down to write, I mean, how aware are you of that? I mean, how much self-editing takes place? Obviously, you just blog under your first name, but I got to imagine that still you're far more conscious of the implications of what you're writing.
Of course. Well, there's a, you know, whenever I start writing about some very sensible issue or topic, I try first to get the best information I can. Something that I can find on the internet, on whether figures or facts or articles, academic articles or newspapers, and then I start kind of ordering my arguments. If I want to convey a certain message, these are the steps I want to follow, and I want to make sure that all my facts are documented and double-checked, because if I just put some information that is not verified or it's just a rumor or whatever, I get tagged for it.
And you call yourself a blogger? You triple check your facts?
Wait a second. I'm sorry. So in other words, the truth is somewhat of a defense. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because I know that if, you know, the government or the authority want to get me, they will. However, you know, fact-checked or perfect my post would be, but at least if I am indeed tried in court or, you know, if my case is publicized, they would say, oh, he was, you know, trying to get out the truth, but he was tagged for it. So,
you know, I mean, this is, it's fascinating because I've asked a very similar question of an American blogger, and the answer would have been, I do more or less what you go through,
right.
But the reason why they do it is because their commenters will call them out on it and they'll lose their credibility, as opposed to the idea of, like, I've got to anticipate the idea of what happens if the government comes after me, how much...
That's because you know that the judiciary is independent from the executive if you do criticize it. So you know that if indeed they are going to be tried for a libel case or whatever, they are sure that the judge is going to treat the case fairly and the jury is going to consider the case fairly, which is not really the case for Morocco.
Interesting.
And there are other issues. For instance, we have this problem with the southern Sahara. You had a group of independentists that want to be a free state, independent state. The official line in Morocco is that basically it's one nation from the northern city to the very smallest village at the south. And if you try to deviate from the official consensus, as it were, you might attract problems from the government, but also from, you know, other fellow bloggers that also believe in the national unity. I personally do not believe that, you know, we should have two states, but my views on that are quite peculiar compared to what others would say. So it's a bit, you know, whenever I start writing about it, I'm going to make sure that this is what I believe in, and I will get the facts straight so that whenever, if something goes wrong, and I hope it won't, it's going to be, there's going to be a clear proof that they didn't get me because I told a lie, but because just they wanted to get me.
So let me ask you, and this is a question for both of you. Maybe, John, you maybe have some insight into this. But how are you here? I mean, by what process does the State Department say, okay, you, Zuhair, you're going to be part of this program. Do you sign up for this? What are the currents behind this decision-making process?
Every U.S. embassy in every country has a social media or a media specialist or a liaison officer.
I think we call them CIA. Is that right or no?
No.
Okay.
Okay. This is the kinder and gentler side of the State Department. Yeah.
So there's a...
And these people are just following what's happening on the blogosphere of the respective country. Right. And the guy, so my contact at the U.S. Embassy, just picked up on my website, and he sent me an email saying, I've been following your blog for a couple of months. I found what you write is interesting. The State Department is setting up an FPC tour. Do you want to be nominated for it? I said, sure, okay. And two months afterwards, he sent me an email saying, okay, you've been selected among the 20 participants to the FPC. These are the papers you need for your visa, and, you know, you get...
Do you get nervous when you get an email like that?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like, yeah, I would say, like, you know, how do I know this is actually coming from
me? Sure, so I had to check, actually, the IP address to make sure that the guy is really sending his email from the State Department or from the U.S. Embassy in Morocco.
Get on a plane and end up somewhere else.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly.
Not exactly Chicago.
Well, I mean, John, tell me from your perspective, okay, because when that guy from the State Department, ostensibly from the State Department, in the embassy reads Zuhair's blog, what is it that you think that would have him email Zuhair as opposed to somebody else and say...
I can tell you. I've gone abroad with State to do these kind of trainings of journalists, and I'm familiar because they've explained to me sort of how the program works. One of the programs State has is they try to outreach to influential journalists or up-and-coming, potentially influential journalists in other countries, particularly in, you know, countries that are still developing democratically. And the idea is, just like the International Visitors Program in general, where we bring interesting up-and-coming people to the States, they want to bring folks to the States, educate them about what America is. State in the past has done a program where they brought simply Muslim journalists, a crowd of them, for 3 weeks to the States. They could meet Muslim Americans. They could go to mosques. And a lot of these guys at the time, I was told, they didn't realize that, you know, the practice of the Muslim religion was actually allowed freely in the States. They kind of thought that there was a little bit of this Christian domination. And the idea is to show these guys what America's about so that hopefully in the future they might have a more rounded view of what America is.
So that's interesting. So this is not about necessarily the United States trying to create some type of democracy movement in, say, Morocco, as much as it is about trying to make Moroccans more aware of how America works, or is it both?
I would say that the United States State Department would never be in a position to tell any country we're here to create a democracy. That's a bit forced. I do think that our government believes, as do most of us, that helping create a free press, helping create an educated press, a press that maybe is more open to America and other Western ideas and everything else, helps a country become more democratic and more open. I think the goal is overall just helping these countries develop and also hopefully helping them be a little more open to America.
Now, I know Morocco is in North Africa, but I mean, I guess it's sort of irrelevant to what's happening in terms of the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
What implications has it had in Morocco? What implications has it had for you as a blogger in this, as a person in this region?
After the Tunisian Revolution and the Egyptian uprising, I think some people, you know, very high up in Morocco took fright of what happened. And at the same time, it emboldened a lot of people into speaking out and, you know, and calling for change. Before the constitution reform, I was one of the very few marginal people calling for a constitution reform. I mean, my dream is to establish a monarchy in Morocco similar to that of Spain, the United Kingdom, and the monarchies in Sweden and all the Scandinavian countries. And I was like...
One which is largely ceremonial.
Yeah, and the king would be the figurehead, the head of state, but the real politics would be in the hands of elected representatives. And I was like, you know, whenever I get a comment, something like, okay, this is nice, but the Moroccan people are not interested in that. They're interested in bread and butter issue, like how to improve their standards of living, how to make sure that the local administration isn't going to harass them, how we're going to improve the economy. And so I tried to do that on parallel. I tried to kind of defend and support the advocacy for a constitution reform. At the same time, contribute to the debate into improving the minimum wage, thinking some new policy for, I don't know, the industry or the agriculture in Morocco. And now that we have the constitution reform by the king's speech, suddenly a lot of people discovered that indeed we need a political reform.
Now, the
so
king
I
did
became
this,
mainstream, so to speak.
So the king basically did this to preempt any type of...
Yes, the good thing, well, the good thing, it was, it is, I don't know if it's a curse or a blessing, but the good thing about the regime is that they learned lessons from Tunisia and Egypt. It's not going to be, okay, these are just a bunch of agitators, we're not going to pay attention to their claims. They preempted any serious demonstrations in the coming month or the coming years.
Yeah. Interesting. And so now you're having a full-on debate about the...
Yeah, and the debate
I mean, how
is
legitimate...
likely to be closed now, because in perhaps 2 hours, the king is going to give
only
a
speech. Lasted, the debate lasted, what, about 5-6 hours?
March 9th, okay. Today. Yeah.
So it's been an...
The debate is not going to be closed, but people will lose interest.
Do you feel that there's been a legitimate debate?
I wish it was longer. I wish it was on a better terms, but it's a first step. I mean, I'm very optimistic on that, because it got people thinking and speaking their mind about the what's good, what's wrong, and what's right in the country. And it's a first step. It's a good thing. And I'm kind of disappointed because it's going to be closed in with referendum day and the elections that are going to follow. So
this is a period where it was leading up to a referendum.
Yeah.
And do you now know what the referendum will be, or is that going to be announced actually today,
yes,
Friday, June 17th?
Exactly. He's going to speak in 2 hours. A speech to the nation, and
so what happens? Do you get on Twitter now and
I
start
wish
to follow
speaking in a panel? So I'm going to be in, you know, following two things at the same time.
You're going to be on a panel and underneath the table. You're
going
to be holding
exactly.
your smartphone,
so,
looking at
Twitter.
At one
point, I'm
just
going
like
to
us.
That's
like
exactly.
What's going on.
I have not had a conversation with somebody where I have not been also subsequently
so
checking.
Perhaps
to see
I'm going to shout during the panel something like freedom, democracy, or just disappointed. Oh, nothing's going to happen.
Halfway through the panel, you may just get incredible.
I kind of went crazy.
What is the panel that you're going to be on?
It's Youth and Democracy. The panel's name is Changing the Guard, Youth and Democracy.
That's going to be a very stunning panel.
Yeah.
If you have,
we have
can
some
announce
people
halfway
from Zimbabwe,
through it.
The Zimbabwean girl from with me at the FBC, too, is an incredible activist involved in women issue in her country, and she's very outspoken. She was at the keynote address, and her address was stunning.
He's had some people in his group here, too, who have gotten into some serious trouble for blogging and writing in their country.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The Bahraini girl, for instance.
From Bahrain.
Her family?
Yeah, everything. She's
herself,
actually sick today,
family.
So she's back at the hotel. Yeah. But apparently, I mean, Zwahir, why don't you explain? But
Basically, she was this journalist in, you know, large newspapers in Bahrain, TV talk host, show host. And fortunately for her, she spoke her mind on what was wrong in Bahrain. I think in a blog post.
Okay.
Yeah, it was on her blog, and she was fired from these newspapers, and she lost her job at the TV station. And what is worse is that her family was threatened as well. Her sister was taken into custody.
Wow.
The children.
Children as well.
They're
well, they're threatened.
Yeah, threatened
her
children.
House was apparently there was going to be some arson. It's daunting. I mean, when she was telling her story, I felt like I don't belong to this panel. She is. You know, she really is under threat from because she practiced her freedom of speech. Yeah.
Wow, it's stunning. Well, I mean, nevertheless, I mean, you know, clearly, if the issues of retribution from the government are something that you have to be conscious of every time you sit down to sit at the computer, you know, it is impressive. And so, you know, I applaud what you're doing, and I appreciate your spending some time with us. And good luck. I hope the referendum is announced in a way that is positive for change.
Let's
in Morocco.
So.
And
right.
John Aravosis, when you sit down at the computer, short of maybe the implications for someone like Dr. Laura, who probably wishes you'd never, ever touch the computer, or in some instances, I think Tracy Morgan or the current administration.
Yeah, they get annoyed too.
And many others, but I hope we have the opportunity to talk a little bit more.
Oh, we
and
will.
We will in the future. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to find...
We are broadcasting from Netroots Nation in 2011, and sitting with me is another foreign blogger who has is attending Netroots Nation as part of a State Department program, Delta Ndu, from Zimbabwe, and you're here with the contingency from the State Department.
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us, and tell me something. What is the state of blogging in Zimbabwe? Is this something that happens commonly or no?
I would say blogging is a very new phenomenon in Zimbabwe, and it's largely something that most people haven't bothered to really get involved in. And that could be for a number of reasons, chief amongst them being the fact that very few people have access to internet, and those that do usually want to do Facebook and don't understand what blogging would be about. And it also have a lot to do with people generally not feeling safe in expressing themselves on any forum. So they'll probably be suspicious of something like blogging that gets your name out there.
And do you, how is it that you came to have access enough to the internet to be blogging? How is it that you overcame these obstacles that seem to have prevented it from catching on in Zimbabwe?
Okay, I think I would say I have a passion for it. I have a passion for writing. I have a passion for expression. So when you love something, you're pretty much not going to see the challenges as obstacles. You're probably going to see like, oh, this is something I have to get around and get to doing what I want to do or what I need to do. And for me, one of the reasons why blogging was such an appealing option was that the wide range of topics that I wanted to discuss wouldn't have found an audience generally in Zimbabwe, because I write from a very feminist perspective, and Zimbabwe is very patriarchal, so there wouldn't have been that many people to consume my writing on a local level. So when I write now, I look for a platform that goes beyond Zimbabwe, that goes beyond Africa, that is global. So blogging for me was that platform.
Were you reading a lot of blogs, or was it simply that, and so you were interested in the medium, or was it simply like you have been writing and you found simply another means in which to publish that material?
I sort of strayed into it because when I finished my college education, I got hired as a junior reporter. And I was assigned to the magazine desk. So I wasn't very happy with being on the magazine, because then you'd be covering fashion shows and makeup. And I felt like I had other things that I wanted to discuss, that I wanted to put a spotlight on. So in the end, I would find myself writing at home, and I have all this material that I can't publish. So I ended up sending it to a website in Zimbabwe. It's called the Kubatana Trust, and it's a community of online activists. So I sent them my material, and they started publishing it. And when they started publishing it, they reached an audience of over 2 million people. They send weekly newsletters. So one day I wake up and I find 4 private-owned newspapers have reproduced what I wrote, and suddenly my opinion counts for something. I think I just kind of got hooked. Like, oh, people care what I think, so why don't I just tell them what I think more?
Did these newspapers ever compensate you for your...
Oh, no, they didn't. Because the way the Kubatana works, it's like they have a blogging platform. So it's really about engaging one another, contributing to the dialogues and the debate and the discourses on national development and good governance and democratic processes and, you know, human rights. But it's really about us finding a space where we engage as activists, where we debate, and where we try to move the country forward in terms of policy and holding our leaders to account. So it's a space where we get to talk to one another, to agree and mostly to disagree. So we have people who subscribe, and those editors probably subscribed to it. And during the weekly newsletters, they'll see, oh, there's somebody who's writing. We think we can publish this in our paper, so they'll take that.
Interesting. And what is the name of your blog?
My blog is www.itsdelta.wordpress.com.
It's Delta?
Mm-hmm.
ITS Delta.
Yes.
It's deltawordpress.com.
Yes.
And what? So what? So tell me some of the issues that you're really passionate about.
Oh wow, I'm big on social justice. I mean, I'm a sucker for it. So chances are, if I write about marginalized people, I write about social groups
in Zimbabwe.
In Zimbabwe, yes. Zimbabwe is usually the premise. I may put a regional overview of it and look at the SADC countries as well. I may put an African, you know, context to it. But usually Zimbabwe is my premise, and my community is usually the starting point, because my articles more or less become something of social commentary. I read something, I see something, and then I comment on it. And I always find a way of looking beyond the superficial issues that were raised and trying to interrogate what forces are behind the status quo.
Is there much of that that goes on in Zimbabwe? I mean, much of that type of analysis?
I would say no. I would say there isn't that sort of analysis, because, first of all, if you look at the media landscape in Zimbabwe, over the years we've lost a great deal of seasoned journalists who left the country and now work elsewhere. And it has taken a long time to groom and to raise through the ranks competent, or can I say seasoned and mature people to replace those journalists who left. So you find that more or less coverage of issues tends to be very superficial.
Uh-huh.
And with the economic situation that has prevailed over the years, most newspapers were forced to reduce their print run. So that's less pages. So then that's less analysis. And you prioritize hard news and sports and whatever you think is going to sell. So you sacrifice some things. You sacrifice maybe the health desk. You sacrifice maybe the gender desk if you had one. You're probably going to sacrifice the business desk and leave a little space, because of those limitations as well.
Right. Now, Zimbabwe went through some devastating economic times as recently as a couple of years ago, and things are looking a little better, yes or no?
Things are definitely a whole lot better, although we have a long way to go. But I think the way that Zimbabweans have handled the situation is just testament to how resilient they are. And I think it also gives credit to the education system in Zimbabwe, which is the highest in Africa. I think it's because a while ago when I was in Ghana, somebody asked me, why don't you Zimbabweans go into the streets and protest and burn your buildings? And, you know, why don't you just have an uprising or something? And then I explained to the person that the problem with, or I don't know if it's a problem, but the thing with Zimbabwe is that because we had a good education system, so many people were educated and they had options. So they could get better jobs elsewhere. So they went and got better jobs elsewhere. And when they were there, they were helping their family members, sending money, and everybody was doing the best they could with what was. And now that we have a coalition government, you find that there's a willingness to work together. A willingness to say, you know what, we've been through hell and we're out of the woods now, so let's make this work. And we see, because of new media, more engagement from Zimbabweans in the diaspora. Zimbabweans are saying, you know what, we now live in Australia, in Canada, in America. We're based here. We're not coming back home, but we want to be part of what you're doing in trying to rebuild the country.
Is there a danger for you to be blogging? I mean, is there... do you feel free to blog whatever you want and no retribution from the government, no retribution? I mean,
I would say the reason why I'm here today is because I blog exactly what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what I want. And I've had hate mail. Because, I have a feminist take on things most of the time. So when I was writing my column, I had a column in the newspaper, the editor gets so much hate mail. And like, can you withdraw that girl's column? It's so bad. She's always writing about rights. and we're just going to stop buying your paper. We think she's disrespectful. She doesn't appreciate our culture. Why is she talking about women having rights? These women are our wives. You know, they belong to us. We paid a dowry for them. So she can't be inciting them and telling them to know their rights because we know their rights for them. That's why we married them, because we know what's best for them, etc., etc. And I also engage in discussions around politics. So, and also I do disagree with some of the stances that political figures take. Like, I wrote extensively defending the rights of sexual minorities, because in Zimbabwe, our head of state is very homophobic, and our prime minister is also homophobic.
Mugabe, so, and
So a year ago, they were commemorating some faction, and both of them agreed that they don't want homosexuals in Zimbabwe. One of the few things apparently that they agreed on.
Well, that's very nice. At least there's something that their mutually shared bigotry is something that they can.
Yes, and I thought, come on now, we have all these developmental issues. We've got things that we need to work on as a nation, and you can't have the two people who are the point men, as it were, towards the getting the country out of a rut. And the only thing they can agree on is bigotry.
Well, it's important to have somebody to blame.
So I wrote a whole blog around that. And one of the articles that I'd written became the civic society's stance on the matter. And they actually sent letters to the prime minister, say, you know what, we totally disagree with your stance, and we think you're undermining the rights of these people. And we really think you should be focusing on important things. So that's part of what I've done. Because in a way, I love to see that what I've written leads to some action.
Interesting.
That somewhere, someone pays attention and does something about
But I assume that you are critical, and you've mentioned you're critical of the government. Is there really that much freedom in Zimbabwe to be that critical of the government? Or is it? Are you doing it in a space that is one where, because your audience is very much outside of Zimbabwe, there's no value to the government to shut your voice down, because in some ways you're projecting a certain amount of freedom and of expression that really doesn't cost them that much, because it's people aren't really exposed to it as much in Zimbabwe.
Well, I would say I'm critical of the government. I'm not critical of personalities of the government. And because the government comprises three political parties, that's like...
Nobody knows who to get offended.
I'm shooting at everybody.
Right, okay.
So why the hell would you be offended?
Right.
But at the end of the day, I'm saying you guys are giving everybody a raw deal. You know, so you need to do something. You need to do something about maternal mortality, because women are dying giving life. You need to do something about the education sector, because it's in collapse. You need to do something about health. So I vent a lot. Like, when a woman dies and they were giving birth, I'm probably going to write about it and say, where is the government? What are you guys doing? Show up already. Or if you have students who fail to write their exams at tertiary institutions because the cadetship system of the government, the loans, we didn't come through. I'm not going to vent about that. Like, you know, you guys are letting this generation down, and these people are tomorrow's leaders. So I'm probably going to be saying, hey, come on, wake up, people. Look at what's happening on the ground. Like I said earlier, it's a lot of social commentary. So when you're doing social commentary and you're premising on what's on the ground, it's really hard for people to take offense. Because I'm talking about something you already know. Mm. If you're wearing a blue shirt, and I kind of say, you know what, your shirt is sky blue. I'm just giving you detail, but you already knew you were wearing a blue shirt. So it's something along those lines. I'm just pointing out the obvious, which isn't so obvious, apparently, to some people. But it's like saying, why we shouldn't be quiet. Somebody should say something. At least remark on it. So that's what I do. I make remarks. I'm like, oh, really? Are we going to let that just fly? I don't think so.
Excellent. And your blog name again?
www.itsdelta.wordpress.com.
Itsdelta.wordpress.com.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught. Breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.